And I was like, hold on a minute. Wait, did he really just? Yes, he
I
did.
did. I sent you a little video of me beating the dragon.
Yeah. Weird.
Well, every
That
once in
sounded
a while.
weird. What you just said sounded really
Yeah.
weird.
Well, sometimes I send Hillary videos of me beating the dragon, but you know.
Whoa. Wow.
That's why we're friends.
Welcome to Rated NA, episode number 102 for the website nerdappropriate.com, where we talk about all things nerdy, which includes everything, pretty much.
Yes.
We deem all things as nerdy. So if you do something and you really love it, then we think you're a nerd about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're all here. No special guests this week. This is actually the first kind of normal podcast we're going to do in the past, like, five, I think. Including the BioWare stuff, like 10. I don't know how many we've.
It's crazy.
Since we've done
this is our
a real
first
one,
normal
so.
Episode. I'm kind of excited just
it's
to talk
about
stuff.
The first normal episode of the new millennium of episodes. Oh wait,
yes.
The new what? Century. The new century of episodes.
Oh, the new.
Oh, got it.
X100. Got it. Yeah.
Yes. Sorry, I'm at a disadvantage right now. I apologize.
What is that disadvantage, Scott, for our listeners?
I've just been, working hard, so I'm tired.
Uh huh. I'm apparently in the same camp as you.
Let's do the rundown.
Oh, so well, can I tell a story before we do that?
No, you tell stories after we talk about what
oh,
we're doing.
Oh, fine. Okay, so on today's podcast, of course, we're going to talk about what we've been up to, and it's actually been longer than you might think with all these other episodes. We're going to talk about some E3 news with Nintendo, Xbox news and their new console, Beyond Two Souls trailer, and then a friend of ours who did something awesome at the Tribeca Film Festival. Ash is going to talk about Dark Arisen. We're going to do a little Bioshock Infinite spoilers. I played the game Adara that Ali Hillis is in and we talked about last week. And Hillary saw the movie Oblivion with Tom Cruise. And then in our Nerquato this week, which is our nerd appropriate question of the week, we ask, where are you currently living? Sorry, let me try that again. Where are you currently living and what is your favorite thing about your town? And we'll tell you where that question came from and the responses later in the podcast.
Yeah. So what's your story, Scott?
Okay, so... I will change the names and the locations to protect the people involved in the story. So
oh boy.
Let's just say that I was at the Winchester earlier today and I overheard a conversation at the table next to me. And the girl at the table was meeting with a study friend to study for finals, right?
Right.
And she was like, this is kind of how the story goes. She was like, so, I was just dating this guy, and we had sex, and then afterwards, I started to have some irritation, so I went to the doctor, and he gave me some antibiotics, so apparently, I'm not contagious or anything, I just have something, and she was like, and then later, she's like, sitting there, she's like, Her study friend goes and gets a drink, right? And then comes back and she's like, oh. It's like, she's like, I can't drink. I can't have sex. I can't even take Adderall right now. She's like, there goes any chance of a one night stand where I don't have condoms with me because apparently I'm allergic to like the number one condom brand in the world.
Is that what?
That's kind of the gist of the conversation. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. Yeah,
did you know these people?
No.
Oh, okay.
I just overheard the conversation. Right.
I thought these were all people we knew because you said
no.
you were
yeah,
changing
their names.
Their
name.
Although like, you didn't wow. actually no. use any names at all.
I didn't
all,
use
so.
Any names, but I changed the location. Yeah. I called right. it the Winchester.
There yeah, go. I got that. Got it.
wow.
But yeah, that's the kind of stuff you hear at the Winchester from time to time. So
it
it's
sure
kinda,
is.
Classic.
It really, yeah. So
so other than listening to lovely, classy women talk about their private areas, what have you been up to?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what are you gonna do, right? That's it was just funny. But anyways, I've I finished Paper Mario Sticker Star. I heard that game
was really fun.
It actually is really fun, and it's weird because they use the sticker mechanic as the combat system, and that's kind of cool because it's like you can't just do the same maneuver over and over again. You can only do it for as many times as you have that sticker, so it's kind of a cool mechanic. It's the Paper Mario series in general seems to be pushing the limits where like the traditional Mario Brothers games are not. So
right. That's
where you go if you're looking for that kind of thing. But anyways, finished that game, started playing Professor Layton. I've really been like working at the school stuff a lot, so I've kind of been gaming sort of like in a non-traditional sense. So I did that. And then I, based on our conversation with Ali Hillis last week, I started playing the game Adara on the Surface. And it's really great. It reminds me of those like old school 90s puzzle adventure games like Shivers or, you know, like
Shivers.
You remember that? Sierra Adventure.
Yeah.
Or like a Seventh Guest kind of game. So that's really great. I played the first episode, which is free. So I encourage everybody that has Windows 8 to go out and try Adara. It's really fun. And Ali Hillis is the main character. And I honestly can't stop listening to that Form and Shape album that Ash posted the article about. Like, that's really awesome.
I listened to that and then shared it with our friend Ryan, too, who also liked it.
So, cool.
Because I was like, this is right up your alley. And he was like, oh, I love it. So
yeah, it's great. And you guys might be surprised to hear that I read a comic book.
I mean,
you guys know, but I'm into like Moogs and stuff and analog instruments, and I have a theremin, but there is a comic book now about the theremin. I mean, or the guy, Leon Theremin, who invented the theremin. They basically reimagine this character as like an international super spy who can travel through space and time. So it's like right up my alley. It's like the guy, basically the story is like through the invention of the theremin, he opened a rift in space time and can like, now he's like a super spy. And it's incredible. So I'm gonna stick with that. So you can, anybody that's listening, you can go read my review on nerdappropriate.com, but it's a great comic. I'd encourage everybody to listen. So, Ash, what have you been up to?
Busy week. Good week, though.
You told me you were stressed out, man.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was work stuff, but that's really fucking boring to talk about. So I'm not going to, but
right.
I picked up Dark Arisen on Tuesday, which is the expansion. I guess it's an expansion pack for...
I don't know. It's weird because it includes the original game as well. And it gets rid of the theme song.
Yeah. It's for Dragon's Dogma.
Capcom. Is it a standalone or can you...
It's both.
If you never play the original?
It comes with the full game. It just adds an extra continent that you can go to that's essentially just an endless dungeon delve.
You buy it twice? You bought the full game twice, essentially?
Yes. You bought the game twice.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, but there's
no option to get it without it.
No.
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 Oh.
So you can buy the full game now for $40?
Yes.
With Dark Arisen.
Yeah.
Okay.
With Dark Arisen.
This is a confusing marketing plan.
It is. So essentially, if you want Dark Arisen, you have to buy the full game and you get this extra content with a bunch of fun extra stuff. So I've been playing that on and off, and that's been a lot of fun. I went and saw Evil Dead last weekend finally, so I'll probably talk about that a little bit just for a minute. Let's see what else. Jeez, I don't know, watching Game of Thrones.
Ooh.
Playing some Hero Academy.
Losing Hero Academy.
Just one game out of 14, you dick.
Wait, has anybody beat Amanda yet? That's the most important.
I've never played Amanda.
Really? Here.
Oh, Ash, you need to play her. I'm.
I know.
That's
she needs
awesome,
to send
Matt.
Me.
Congratulations.
I'm getting fucking good.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah. It's getting competitive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's good. It's a great game. It definitely, if you haven't checked out Hero Academy from Robot Entertainment on most devices,
iOS,
and actually, it's on PC now too. Steam.
Yep.
It's not on Android. It's just iOS and Steam.
Oh, it's just iOS and Steam? Okay.
Yeah,
well, it's great. So definitely pick that up.
It's on Android.
Wait a minute. Wait. Ash, are you saying that you're not competitive? Just a little bit? Because, and this is why I ask, because I was sent a text message maybe not 2 days ago after a conversation I had with Ash about a stupid dragon that I was having trouble passing. So what does he do? He sends me a video of him passing the dragon or beating the dragon. And I was like... Dick.
Oh wow. Just wait till next gen. You can do that online.
Fun.
And I was like, hold on a minute. Wait, did he really just... Yes, he did.
I did. I sent you a little video of me beating the dragon.
Yeah.
Weird. Well, everyone, it sounded weird. What you just said sounded really weird.
Well, sometimes I send Hillary videos of me beating the dragon, but you know.
Whoa!
Wow.
That's why we're friends. But Hillary, what have you been up to?
Okay, well, we already talked about the fact that I saw Oblivion, which was really, really good.
Was it?
Yeah, no, I have to say, I'm really glad I saw it in the theater. And I'm not a huge Tom Cruise fan, but wow, he was pretty good.
He can't be. He's so tiny.
Oh, why? Is that because I'm so tall?
No, he's really tiny.
Yeah, I know.
He's like 5'2".
Okay, so then I also saw Promised Land, which is a great movie, and played some Dark Arisen. And there's a new book that came out this week called The Elite, and it's in the series called Selection. It's like a YA post-apocalyptic, like, dystopian type thing, but it's kind of like The Bachelor meets Fallout. I don't know. It's kind of cool. So I've been reading that. Yeah. So that's cool. What I've been doing. So, Matt, what about you?
I finally started up Tomb Raider, because all my shit's hooked up. So
nice.
Started up Tomb Raider. I've been playing, like... I have been working a lot, playing catch up at work, and I've been limiting myself to just like an hour at a time of playing Tomb Raider at night, and usually just when I want to unwind and play a little bit. And then on Friday night, I guess because I had nothing to get up for on Saturday, I got completely sucked down the vortex of Tomb Raider and played till 5 a.m. in the morning.
Oh,
it's really good, right?
Yeah,
it's awesome. I mean, it's like, it's great. I really love it. The writing's fantastic. Like, everything, all the fears that I had from the piece I played at Comic-Con and like the weird promo we saw that they definitely changed.
Yeah.
Is gone. I mean, everything in context is done really well and is pretty awesome. There's some amazing scenes inside of it too.
Have you played the part where she's kind of shifting into a kick-ass awesome?
I would imagine I'm more than halfway through, I believe, at this point. So
she literally starts changing what she says during combat. And
No, I just went through a scene where she's like cussing out the dude that she's like chasing down to go kill, essentially. Yeah, so it's great. It's great. The only thing that I actually talked to Ash really briefly about, the thing it brought up in me that was like, I like it in this game. It's weird to say this, that this game reminded me of it, because this game did not annoy me with it. But there's like a trope in video games now that I'm getting really tired of, which is the false ending. And where like, hey, the game could end right. Oh, everything went wrong. You got to keep playing. Hey, the game could end right. Oh, everything went wrong again. Yeah. You got to keep playing. Like, and this game does it a few times, but always in the most epic, like amazingly written way. But it just made me think about it. And then I started thinking about other games that do it and how often that really annoys me. And it was just a weird thing that came up. And then beating Ash in Hero Academy, been doing that.
just once.
I started playing this.
I underestimated you. I just went like balls out in the beginning. I was like, wait, what's happening?
Here's the problem.
What's happening here?
The game before that, you were playing me and you were the Dark Elves and you had that Reaper guy.
Yeah.
And I let you... on accident let you power him up to max power. He basically becomes unstoppable at that point. Like, it's impossible to kill the dude once he's gotten that badass. And Ash had him planted in front of where I pull my guys out. So it was essentially like, it was basically just spawn camping, and I couldn't do it. I would literally get a guy out and run him across the board was the only thing I would do in my turn, and then he would kill him with his other guys like on the other side of the board. So I couldn't do anything. I lost the game, and then I beat Ash.
It was yours.
It was.
Must have felt wonderful.
I've been playing another game called Clash of Clans on the iPad.
Is it a racist game?
Yeah, yeah. It's all about the KKK. No, it's like Warcraft Lite, if you will.
Cool.
All right.
It's okay. It's time-based. So, you know, you can buy jewels that speed up time if you need to, which is like their hook. And it was okay at first, and then it like nosedives in pace if you don't buy stuff from them.
That's how they
and it's priced a little heavy. Like $5 is like the reasonable amount of coins to get, but it's like still kind of, it's weird. I like it and don't like it. I keep playing it just because it's kind of going now, but I only really check it like once a day anymore. I don't really play like I was for the first couple of days. And then if you're a longtime listener, you'll know this, but we are big D&D fans here in Florida. I won't speak for Hillary. I don't know.
I've never played.
When we hang out with you one of these years, we're going to have to drag you in because you'll have so much fun. You'll eat it
up. Like the only like game that I'll play that's not a video game is like Monopoly. You know what I mean? Because I'm like really good at
that. You don't want to play Monopoly with us, I'll tell you right now.
Oh, no. I'm unbeatable. No, I'm not even joking.
I'm gonna nip this in the bud right here. You don't want to play Monopoly with us.
No. I'm just gonna tell you guys don't want to play with me because you will lose.
I don't want to play at all.
Yeah, exactly. Honestly, that's the point.
All right.
Monopoly has gotten a little derisive, is that the right word? In the past, all of the D&D campaigns that I've run have always exploded into these like 15-person groups because everybody wants to play and we can't tell people no usually. And this time, it just kind of spontaneously started, and it was just Ash, my wife and his wife, and me DMing. And we've done two sessions, and Scott, once he gets kind of school evened out a little bit, is going to jump in, I think. And we have another friend named Amy who might jump in at some point. But we're keeping it small, 3 to 5 players, and that's it. And it's different.
It's awesome. It's a lot of fun.
And I've been kind of writing it on the fly too, which is I've never really done before. And I don't know if it's super boring sometimes because I don't really know what I'm doing, or if it's kind of fun because it is totally random at this point still. So
no, it's fun. I'd like to.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of fun.
I've already got a character in mind too, so I'm stoked.
Awesome. We played the first day we played, the first session was like kind of all combat, and then the second session we did yesterday was all like detective work and role playing, which wasn't the plan, but it kind of ended up being that, and it was different. We've never really had that happen, so it was cool.
You know what else is different?
What's that?
News.
Nintendo cancels their E3 keynote.
That was good.
Yeah, it was good.
Heyo.
Hey.
So you get all that big NA money.
So Nintendo came out this week and said, hey, guys, we're not going to do a big-ass keynote at E3. We're going to do a bunch of small hands-on events for the press to come and check out what we're doing. They're going to be, I think they're even off-site. I don't even think they're doing them inside of the E3 camp. They're literally renting out some rooms and doing small hands-on events for Nintendo.
Do you think this is a white flag?
They're fucked because I heard the Wii U can't run the new Unreal Engine, Unreal 4. It can't run it. Yeah. And it can't run the new Frostbite engine. So basically, two of the biggest engines that are going to be, at least at the beginning of next gen, the Wii U can't even run them. So like people are literally saying they don't want to develop for it. So now what?
Strange.
It's like what's going to happen unless they start, you know, actually start putting out shit, Nintendo branded things, like put out a Metroid, put out a Mario that people really want to play. The third party is screwed.
Yeah, I think that's the problem too, is I think what this is saying, I don't think it's a white flag like they're giving up to the other consoles. I do think it is them saying, hey, we're not putting out any big games this year, sorry. Like there's going to be no Zelda, there's going to be no Metroid, there's going to be no new Mario, you know, Sunshine or whatever the big line is for Mario right now. I think this is them saying, hey, why don't you just come play some games and check out the Nintendo again, and we'll do some small presser events so you can see what's going on and not really have any big announcements.
They did announce a prequel to Link to the Past that was going to come out for the 3DS, which
but
seems pretty awesome.
Nobody wants 3DS. I mean, people want 3DS games right now. but what I'm saying is, like, that's
nobody wants E3, that.
No, that's not an E3 press event. Like here's our brand new fucking Zelda game for the Wii U is a massive E3 thing.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I kind of read this a little differently. I mean, how do you guys, would you be surprised at this point if Xbox and Sony someday did the same thing and they were like, hey, we're not going to really do presentations at E3 anymore because it's like not worth our time and money to do this. So we're just going to do like smaller announcements, like the same way Sony did their original PS4 announcement, just sort of like on their own.
Well, I mean, Xbox is doing their own announcement, which we'll talk about.
Don't jump the news.
But but at the same time, I think the honest reason why Nintendo is not, you know, really going to be attending E3 in force or having a big press conference, because they don't really have much to show at this point, and the journalists would just eat them alive if they all line up in that room and the Nintendo shows jack shit. And then Xbox, you know, is showing which they're going to do at E3 this year, show their slate of upcoming, you know, exclusives and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Nintendo's just going to look ridiculous. So they're just bowing out. I mean, to save face, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Did any of you buy a Wii U?
Oh, no.
No. Okay, so, I mean, how would you feel? I mean, obviously, this is the reason why they came out so early, to try to get as many people as possible before this kind of news really hit the fan, maybe. But how would you feel if you actually spent the money and bought a Wii U? Because I was pretty excited about the Wii U until I found out about this.
Well, I'll let Scott go first. But
I mean, I'm not even necessarily convinced that it's going to be worth buying an Xbox or a PS4 when they first come out either.
What?
Yeah.
No. I'm not on the PS4 bandwagon. Scott and I are the only ones who aren't, but not the only ones, but on this podcast, I think.
You know, to be honest with you, I think with the PS4 announcement, people only remembered the positive things, and they filled in the gaps of anything that could be negative with something positive. So I feel like when the system actually comes out, it's probably not going to be what you imagined it to be when they announced it. And I think, you know, and I think in the same way, I definitely think with the Wii U, just to get back to the point, was that, like, I think the Wii U definitely has some ground to make up with, like, explaining to people, like, what the value is of the secondary gamepad and, like, helping developers to make games that use that functionality. But
yeah, but the problem, not to cut you off, but the problem is, I mean, Xbox is already doing the exact same thing with Smart Glass, and Smart Glass works.
Yeah, so, but why, like, is it that when the Wii U does a second screen, it's a gimmick, and when the Xbox does Smart Glass, it's not a gimmick?
No, the problem is, why would they develop the hardware to do something fantastic, but then not develop on the inside and make it easy for third parties and other developers to use it? Exactly. I mean, that was a bad move, because it could be really, really cool.
Yes.
No, I think, I mean, I'm still not convinced Smart Glass works or is cool. I've seen zero things that use it well other than Netflix, like,
that's all,
or Xbox Music. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like,
HBO Go.
Yeah, Dance like Central 3 uses it and it's good.
It's such secondary things, but I'm saying, like, I haven't seen a top tier, like, action game use Smart Glass in any kind of convincing way.
Oh, where it's like your inventory or something like this.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a thing right now.
It's never going to happen. I agree. You can't assume that everyone's going to have a Smart Glass device.
Yeah, yeah, and I agree. Like, I think it's they've done nothing to prove themselves what they can do, you know. So now they're screwing third parties in a way by not having that other stuff. And there's clearly no announcement. So why have a big E3 presser? I don't blame them at this point.
I don't either.
But speaking of big pressers, Xbox moved their date. They'd previously said end of April they were going to announce, or, you know, have an Xbox announcement. And they moved it. From what I understand, the reason they moved it from behind the scenes is that they are planning to actually have hardware to show on May 21st, and they wouldn't have necessarily nailed that date as of the end of April. So they're pushing it back to the end of May, and we are feasibly going to see the codename Durango Xbox 722 304 or whatever it might be called.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
May 21st.
Anybody have any educated guesses as what they think is going to be the big thing?
I mean, obviously the argument that every other podcast on the planet is talking about is the always on connectivity. And I don't think it's going to happen.
I think they're going to back off.
Yeah. I mean,
you do?
Yeah. I don't think they're going to do it at this point.
See, I don't think that they are. Like, I think either. They're absolutely going to try to be the pioneer of that.
Yeah.
I don't think the new Xbox and the PS4 are going to be as different as people think they're going to be.
No, they're not. They're not going to be very different at all. They're basically just PCs.
It's going to be like a Dell computer and an HP computer. Yeah, and you're going to be like, okay, great. I'll just buy the brand that I like better.
You know? They're obviously going to have...
The other rumors, they have the same exact chip inside of them.
Yeah. Ooh.
So...
They're brothers. They're friends. Well, I mean, okay, what I am excited about is the fact that games are going to look really pretty. It's going to take a couple years to get, you know, everything to where it should be with these new systems. But, you know, when you're looking at the new Unreal Engine, the new Frostbite Engine, it is going to look much different than what we're seeing now in a couple years.
And we're talking Blu-ray, so the games will have, what is it, the double down, like 31 gigs of space or something like that?
Yes.
I'm excited for games that fit on a disc.
Yeah,
yes. So.
Agreed. And then I know what Ash is super excited about, though, is the Kinect 2 that's going to get announced with it.
Oh, yeah. As long as there's Kinectimals, again, because I have a date with a connectimal, if you know what I mean.
Still do.
Whoa.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Sounds a little furry to me.
You read? There was an article about, you know, the new achievement system and how.
Of course, you'd hone in on that.
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting because the idea is that you can design achievements in such a way to get gamers to do the things that you want them to do, right? And you can change achievements on the fly. So let's say you're doing like a community weekend. You can add an achievement to the game where you're like, if you participate in the community weekend, then you'll get this achievement. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's kind of like what seems to be on the horizon is like stuff like that, where it's not really like, I mean, achievements were dumb to begin with, and I can't stop collecting them myself. Okay. But the whole idea is that you put them in the game to get people to do the things you want them to do. And that seems to be...
I feel like I'm the only person that does not ever look at...
I totally look.
Yeah.
I've never looked at them in my life.
Well,
I've never
gone good.
Oh, check out the achievements.
No, I think that's great. I think that's what you exactly have to do. Especially if what they say is going to happen actually happens, then you definitely should never look at them again.
Well, sometimes, I mean, they right now, as they stand, they can actually be kind of fun. I'm like, they'll make you perform a mechanic in a game that you wouldn't do otherwise. And you end up having like a whole lot of fun. It's almost, you know, a metagame inside the game where you're like, oh, I have to perform this many assassinations. And it adds to the longevity of a lot of games, too. So I understand why they did it. It's the ones that are like, collect every fucking feather.
Oh my god, I was totally thinking that.
Yeah, it's just like, are you kidding me? Like, go fuck yourself. I don't want to spend 18 hours collecting shit.
No, it's funny because I was just thinking AC3 when you were talking about that. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I would have never stuck my sword-laced musket gun into one enemy to shoot the enemy behind him had I not known that there was an achievement to do that.
Yeah.
But am I going to go collect all the feathers? Probably not.
No.
It's like, that's the problem, is that like a 50-point achievement in one game is not equivalent to a 50-point achievement in another game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's not like a currency that translates evenly between different titles and experiences. And like, even if you have like, okay, for example, so there's an app on the Xbox called Kinect Play Fit, and all it does is it track your fitness progress across a certain set of games, which includes Dance Central 3, but you can earn achievements just for turning that app on and looking at it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like, for basically playing the games you already play, you can double down on achievements. So the whole system is kind of like pointless in some ways and then useful in other ways. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. We're getting kind of like off the track, but
yeah,
off the rails.
So I'm just going to say that I disagree with you on the next generation of consoles. And I have a feeling that the next point that we have to talk about in the news, we're also going to disagree.
Okay.
Well, he hasn't. I think I'm the only one who's watched it. You've watched the video, Hillary, then we can totally disagree on this thing. But I'm going to guess you didn't click it and watch it.
I'm going to guess that you're right, but at the same time, I'm just going to say that I am not in the same camp as you on this particular one.
Okay, so at the Tribeca Film Festival, I just blanked the game company's name.
Oh, Quantic Dream.
Quantic Dream showed up with Beyond Two Souls and actually showed a two-hour film, I guess, or an hour and a half film, something like that, of Beyond Two Souls at Tribeca Film Festival. And... also announced that Willem Dafoe is a new voice in the game. He's going to be an actor and a voice in the game. I mean, I know we disagreed about the teaser, and I know really I think it was about marketing for you, Hillary, but I would recommend watching the video. The trailer that I linked is just a short edit of it. You can actually watch, I think, about 35 minutes of it on Quantic Dream's YouTube, possibly. It's been linked a couple places, but... it looks pretty friggin' ridiculous at this point. So they started leaking more of what the actual story is and what you're kind of doing. And you kind of go through the entire lifetime of this girl, Jody, who has this secondary invisible person that she somehow interacts with. And they kind of hint that something went really bad when she was young. It sounds like she killed a young boy or something. And I think that's who the second person is. His name's Aiden. And it just grows from there, and it shows you there's a bunch of in-game footage of you. There's actual combat in the game. It looks like there's a lot of, like, not in a weird way, in a very Quantic Dream way. It looks like it's kind of
quick time.
Yeah. And then there's footage of you looking through Aiden's eyes, in the game and watching like people talk that you wouldn't be able to see like from walking in the room as Jody. There's a bunch of different just kind of cut together scenes of what this story kind of seems to be building to be. It looks really interesting to me. It looks pretty damn epic as far as just a narrative tale goes. And it does look to, I don't know what it's going to do as far as their, you know, kind of build your own story mechanic. I didn't read anything about it, but it actually interested me enough to go watch. I'm going to watch the 35 minute one at some point so I can see more of what it is.
I mean, the footage is beautiful. Like, as long as the narrative's good, it's going to be good. It's just, you know, it's going to run into the same problem that their last game ran into. Heavy Rain and that Walking Dead ran into. Like, is it a game? If it's a bunch of quick time sequences, is it actually a game? And it's like, I say, sure. Why not?
I'm just not convinced.
I mean, they're kind of like, their kind of thing is what they call interactive fiction.
Right.
Where you... I mean, Heavy Rain did have a lot of branching paths in it, and the game could resolve itself in a number of different ways depending on the choices that you make. So, I mean, I would say that it is a game, you know?
I talked to Ash a little bit about this before we played D&D, but I've started to learn that in my cranky old age, I prefer games that are narrative-based and not necessarily gameplay-based.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's part of the reason I'm loving Tomb Raider so much is because it is a tight narrative story. It's not, the gameplay's great. There's nothing wrong with who you are and what you're doing, but at its base, it's a very good story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the kind of stuff that I get into and I really enjoy as a game. Tomb Raider could honestly be 7 hours long and I would turn it off and be like, that was great. I enjoyed it. You know? So that's kind of why I'm excited about a game like this, like Beyond Two Souls. It looks like a narrative. It looks like it's done very well. The voice acting, to me, is fine and looks very good. You know, the art style, everything is gorgeous in the game. So it looks good. I'd recommend at least watching the 2-minute teaser, and if you like that, maybe check out the longer version.
Did you ever play Heavy Rain? I would recommend.
I have a backlog of like 15 PS3 games because I never turn it on. other than Blu-rays, so I need to play some stuff. But yeah, that's on my list of things to play.
So, Hillary, like, why is this game a turnoff for you?
I don't know.
Ellen Page?
No, yeah, because we had that discussion already. Not to like rehash that old discussion, but no, I'm just not a big fan of Ellen Page. And it doesn't make me want to play knowing that Willem Dafoe is going to be a part of it. I like when there's a clear separation between media. Like, I like that video game actors are video game actors and movie actors are movie actors, even when, like, you know, movie actors go to TV and vice versa. Like, that bothers me. I'm not sure why.
Did you not LA Noire? Hold on.
I didn't like LA Noire. It's the madman guy. Like, what is he doing here?
Okay.
But do you get stoked for hearing, let's say, Ali Hillis in like an animated show?
The thing about animated stuff, I mean, like Jennifer Hale, she does a lot of animated stuff, but her voice is so different. Like, animation to me and video games, voice acting, those type of voice actors who can do so many different things, and it's like it's not them. You know what I mean? They actually step into like doing crazy voices and squeaky voices and things like that. You don't necessarily like listen to it and you're like, oh my God, that's Jennifer Hale. I think that's the mark of an amazing voice actor. What I don't like is in video games when you have an actor who is the same voice, practically the same character that they've been in every other movie. And it's just, you know, a spotlight on a particular person.
Yeah, I think it's when the person's actually scanned in and mo-capped that kind of throws me. Like when you have, for instance, like, you know, Martin Sheen was the Elusive Man, but he wasn't Martin Sheen. He was, a totally different model, different character. And he was brilliant as the Elusive Man. And you know, then if you take another game where someone's actually scanned in and they are, you know, they look like the actor, it can kind of, you know, I mean, I could foresee myself playing playing Beyond Two Souls and being like, oh, you know, there's Juno. And like, it might take me out of the game a little bit. So I see what you're saying.
This is really interesting to me because like, they're not Juno and it's not Ellen Page as Ellen Page in Juno. It's Ellen Page as a character. Like, in any, I mean, it's the same in a video game. It's, they're playing a character, whether it's their voice or not.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It's interesting to me that drags you out because To me, yeah, it would make me feel like then any movie you see any actor in ever would drag you out because you're like, that's the same guy from Top Gun. Well, like, it's like
sometimes it does.
No,
yeah.
I think no for me, it's because the technology is finally getting to the point where we can actually identify, oh, that's that actor. I mean, yeah, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, that wasn't possible because graphics weren't that good yet. So there wasn't the possibility of having an actual actor in a game where you could tell who the fuck it was. So, yeah. I mean, now it's just new. And for me, it can be a little bit jarring. Like, I was, for instance, I stopped playing L.A. Noire when Greg Grunberg from Heroes showed up
you know,
in the game. And I was like, that's fucking Greg Grunberg, and he's annoying the shit out of me. And so I stopped playing.
I was going to tell you that the reason that I continued to play L.A. Noire is because John Noble was in the game for like 15 minutes. But he was like... towards the end, and I stuck around just to see him, and I was like, you're awesome and you're a crazy person and I love you. So
yeah, I love John Noble.
That's why I played L.A. Noire. But just to bring it back to Beyond Two Souls, like, it's not even like necessarily what the game, like who is in the game. For me, like, Hillary, you'll appreciate this, I am a huge fan, right, of Quantic Dream. So like, yeah, they've already won me on the pedigree alone. So that... it's not necessarily Ellen Page or Willem Dafoe. It's just the fact that it's Quantic Dream that I'm sold on the game already because they've already sort of earned my trust. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and to be fair, I mean, I feel like Matt, you have a good point. As you're getting older, you're figuring out your likes and dislikes. And I feel like I used to be a lot more broad in my liking of games. I don't know. And now... I mean, I really like The Walking Dead. I thought that was a really cool concept. But am I going to get excited about a non-gameplay, non-combat based game? Probably not. I mean,
I'll
be.
I mean, it's like a game like Heavy Rain in particular definitely does. Like, if you can latch yourself into that story, like, it's a very compelling story to keep you moving through the game because there's like tension there that you become a part of.
Yeah.
The same way that you do in Walking Dead, but just, you know, to like a non DLC extent.
I don't know. Like, I think I really like The Break. And again, I mean, I'm going to mention BioWare, and it's not just because I have a relationship with BioWare, but I like how they break up the storytelling.
You guys like going and then, steady?
Yeah.
It's no, it's
awesome.
Like full disclosure. Like,
you
this.
Like does
they do
BioWare
on TV.
Put out?
Yeah.
That's what
no,
I
mean, I appreciate the fact that I'm just going to ignore everything that you just said. I really appreciate the breaking up of tension. You know what I mean? Like, you have like
shooting.
Intense moment, and then all of a sudden you have to go do something or you shoot something, or you know what I mean? I like the balance.
Oh.
It's not just like tension, okay, tension, 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 and then tension again, and then talking, and then tension.
Sure.
No, I can appreciate your opinion for sure, because a game like Heavy Rain just is constant depression for like 10 hours because it starts out sad and it just gets sadder like as the game goes on.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that's totally respectable. We'll see what happens when it actually comes out. Yeah, I may hate it. Who knows?
Well, I'm definitely going to play it. I mean, full disclosure here, too.
You'll
I'm
still
going
play
to play it.
It.
Yeah, awesome. I'm going to play it. But yeah. I'm not going to be excited when I write that $60 expense. You know what I mean?
For a minute, I thought you were going to say check. And then I was, gonna be
like, I was going to, too.
And
I was like,
video games.
I was like, it's 2013. Who writes checks? What's going on?
And this last bit of news is not one we really need to discuss. It's just kind of a hurrah for a friend that I've had for a very long time. This kid I went to high school with and lived with for a short time named Sean Dunn does documentary films. And if you go to veryapeproductions.com, that's his production group. And I think they've got 5 of them are shorts. And I think they're posted in full on his website. And they might even be in his Vimeo account. But he just recently did his first full-length documentary called Oxiana. And it's about OxyContin use in this small West Virginian town called Oceana and how it's kind of destroying the people there in the town. And he submitted to Tribeca, got a lot of hype at Tribeca, and then ended up winning Best New Documentary Director Award at Tribeca Film Festival.
Congratulations. That's a huge deal.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's awesome. I've known this. He's got the weirdest sense of humor ever created. He's actually more sarcastic than me by far. I never know when he's serious or not. And, he's just an awesome guy, and I'm happy and proud for him, and he doesn't listen. I just wanted to give him props so that other people will go check out his older work, because the documentaries he's done before are really interesting. He did one on Juggalos. He actually went to the gathering of the Juggalos and did a short documentary on that.
What's
he did
a Juggalo?
One,
Oh, no. Is that like a gigolo?
No.
That's like a fan posse. Of the Insane Clown Posse.
Yeah. You'll have to go watch the documentary. Yeah. You'll learn a lot. And then he did one on like a guy who's got the largest record collection in the world and a guy who lives in his van. And it's a bunch of different, very interesting topics. So check it out. But yeah, I'm just a little huzzah for Sean Dunn, Very 8 Productions for winning Best New Documentary Director.
Let me submit a correction. The website is veryapeproductions.com.
Not what did I say?
You said veryape.com.
Oh, veryapeproductions.com. Yeah.
Yes. So go find Sean Dunn at veryapeproductions.com.
Yeah. So
sweet.
Yay. And that's it for the news, guys.
Neat.
Print the paper. Send it to press.
Ah, say.
Check out the games on that broad. Wow.
Wackity smackity doo.
All right, we are back with our reviews and discussion. We're going to be talking about Dark Arisen, maybe a little bit about Bioshock Infinite, and Adara, and Hillary saw Oblivion. But Hillary and I are both playing Dragon's Dogma Dark Arisen, and we have things to say about it. So let me ask you this, Hillary. Do you like it?
That's tough. I really love Dragon's Dogma. I can't say that I love the new expansion. I feel like it's like, here's some pain and some more pain. And then just when you thought that you've gotten somewhere, there's a lot more pain.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. How do you think?
So I guess really briefly.
What do you think?
Yeah. To listeners, I guess explaining what Dark Arisen is. So Dragon's Dogma came out last year. Dark Arisen is sort of an expansion pack that's essentially just a massive dungeon delve. So they give you a whole new island with a series of quests on the island. And then the island is essentially just one big dungeon. So it kind of reminds me a lot of the Deep Roads in a lot of ways. Did it remind you of the Deep Roads?
Yeah, I think that there probably is a story, but I think it's so overshadowed by how punishing it is that, like, I personally want to know, like, why did this woman take me to this place? And why am I, you know, running into this person? I'm not going to give away spoilers, but I feel like there is a story that we just haven't uncovered because honestly, the bosses are too hard.
Yeah. I mean, the story is minimal at best. With all of Dragon's Dogma, that's the one big qualm I had with the game was that there really isn't much of a story. The gameplay is still, I think, some of the best for an action RPG. Mm. But
I'm going to disagree with you there.
Okay. Let's talk about it.
No, I feel like I would be okay with the difficulty of the bosses if I had more control over my pawns
or
my team. Because if, like, for example, if a dragon is vulnerable to ice and you have your pawn who's your like partner specced to have an ice attack, you can't command that pawn to enchant your weapons with ice, which would be awesome if you could do that. I mean, the only commands that you can give them is like go, come and help, which I use all the time, but at the same, it'd be great to, you know, shout out a command or go over there or, you know, do kind of like Mass Effect, like, you know, go take cover over there, you know, because I feel like the way that I've been playing, I feel like I'm constantly rezzing my my team and I'm doing. Like, I'm not doing anything except running around saving people.
Yeah, no, there's definitely some problems with that. I think when they designed the game, their idea was, well, we're going to make the AI, the companion AI, be able to operate on its own without having to micromanage. So like you'll be able to equip your pawn with a series of attacks and they'll use whichever ones they think are best for the encounter. And in theory, that's awesome, right? Mm-hmm. But the problem is, like you said, you're getting these insanely difficult boss fights. And I'm not kidding. Like your companions will die 20 times, 30 times, and you'll have to go and like res them real quick. And it's like, you know, it's a little infuriating. And I think that's where the design of the game kind of falls apart. Like in regular encounters, let's say you walk into a room full of like orcs, the game is just insanely fun. Like you just, you know, you're using all your abilities and your pawns are like helping you out. But when you have like these gigantic bosses that are like, so oddly designed in what they actually can do, you know, and like it's strange and the game kind of falls apart. But
sounds very Capcom.
It is a little Capcom-y. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, difficulty overall.
I even had to turn it, and I'm really against doing this for the most part. Like I'll play everything pretty much at normal, and then I'll try to bump it up if I can. I'm really weird about dropping it down to casual or easy, but I literally had to do that on a couple bosses and still couldn't beat, like the dragon that we talked, the same one that you beat and then sent to me. I literally dropped it down to easy. I'm like, okay, fine. I just want to get past this stupid thing. I'm dying like every 2 seconds. My team sucks. So I changed out my team. A couple times to see if maybe it was my team makeup or something. Mm-hmm. I made sure that everything was set to go, got in there, kept dying. And I'm like, screw this. I'm not going to beat this dragon. I'm just going to run away. So I told me like, I used the cum command and I just like busted out of that room.
Yeah. So let's talk about the cum command. how do you execute the cum command?
With my fingers.
What?
Oh, wow.
Okay. So let's talk about some of the some of the items and stuff. Have you actually found anything while exploring this land?
So the thing that I think is interesting is that you can find a bunch of cursed items, which sounds like they'd be like amazing once you figure out how to purify them and get rid of their curses, which is pretty well explained to you in the game about how you do it. So it's not any big secret, but yeah, you think that when you find like, you know, cursed item level 3 weapon, you're like, oh, that's going to be good. And then when you get it purified, you're like, oh great. It's like a level two.
It's like a fucking earring.
Busted like, sword.
Plus 5 to lightning. You're like that. I found a fucking earring. Are you kidding me? So yeah, there's some design issues, but the thing I am liking is I really like Dragon's Dogma. I wanted to play it more, you know, but I kind of ran out of gameplay with the main game. So it's giving me more to play for a little while, which is great. I don't feel like a burning desire to explore the entire depths of the dungeon. There's no reason to. I don't know if there's a reward at the end. Who knows? But there's no achievements for this. Did you know?
Yeah, I know that. And then that's one of the reasons why I decided to get out. Yeah, that's why I decided to leave, because I actually went back to the old game because I want to experience it again. And honestly, I want to level up. I'm like level 60 and I want to level up so that maybe if I go back to the aisle or whatever it's called, that I'll have a fighting chance.
Yeah.
But I
beat the bishop guy at the end.
The necromancer?
Yeah, I beat him.
You beat him?
Oh, I'm level 75.
That's when I decided to cut out. I was like, I'm done.
That was a glorious moment, too. But anyway, so it's fun. If you're a fan of Dragon's Dogma, I say definitely pick it up. Some outlets are giving it really low scores. It does have some bugs and things like that. But if you're looking for a dungeon crawler to kind of, if you're tired of Skyrim right now and you're waiting for DA3 to come out, I couldn't recommend Dragon's Dogma to you more. So.
Right. Well, one thing that you should probably mention, though, too, is that if you buy Dark Arisen, you're actually buying Dragon's Dogma again.
Yeah.
So it's a whole game. If you haven't picked it up before, definitely get it. It's a really long and intense story. So it's good.
It is good.
Cool.
So last week, Scott, we had Allie Hillis on, and she mentioned a game called Adara, which is an adventure game for the Windows.
For the Windows.
It's an adventure game for the Windows. And you actually, you scurried out and you purchased it.
I did. Well, actually, this is the thing, is that I'm pretty sure it was pre-installed on all Windows 8 installs.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, and I've seen it on, so I've had it on the tablet, but I knew that it was an episodic adventure game. And at the time, I kind of have this problem where if I start playing something I have to finish it, so I was very hesitant to start playing Adara because I knew that I'd have to purchase all the episodes and finish the game. But when Allie said that she was in the game as the main character, the voice for the main character, I was good to go. So I do, as you guys, as listeners will know, I do play a lot of like puzzle style games. So this is definitely something that I like. So I gave it a shot, and I actually did find a lot to like. And I'm not just saying that because Allie's in the game, but it's actually a really good adventure game. And like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, It did remind me of sort of those like old school games from the 90s, like your Shivers or your like Myst in some ways, and like kind of borrows elements from those types of games. And cool. It's so like when you advance through the environments, you advance in a Myst style way.
So there is an actual narrative going on, and it's not just like dumb puzzle one after dumb puzzle two.
Exactly. So like the narrative is that you get wind of your grandfather who may still be alive. Like this is a family of adventurers, and you play as the main character. I think her name is Jane Sinclair. So you venture out to find out what happened to this grandfather of yours, and then some weird shenanigans ensue, and your helicopter crashes like in the desert, but there's like seaweed on your helicopter, and you're like, how did that happen? So you kind of just venture out and start exploring, and that's sort of what provides the foundation for all of the puzzles and everything. And there's sort of a mix. Puzzles are like a healthy mix of like some hidden item puzzles, and then traditional like puzzles where they show you like some apparatus and you don't know what the rules are, so you kind of explore to figure out how to solve the puzzle. There's those kind of puzzles where you explore environments and you just start picking up items, and you're like, oh, why do I have a rock? Why do I have a knife? Like, what do I do with these things? And you get to a puzzle and you're like, oh, I get it. I use the knife here and I do this thing with the rock, and like that's how I solve the puzzle. So there's a good variety of those kinds of puzzles. The thing I like about it is that it does a good job of using some of the features of like the Windows 8 platform in the tablet. So for example, you can use the gyroscopic sensor in the Surface to look around the environments. And I think that's really cool, but to be honest with you, like for me, that was like a little too, like a little motion sick using it, but I thought it was cool that it was in there. They also use the Windows 8 Metro style interface to present the menus to you. So if you want to like, there's collectibles throughout the game. So you can go to this Metro interface to look at the menus. You can look at your save game progress. You can look at your achievements. There's even like an ebook that you can access like from this menu. And then the game, being on a more modern system than like what you had in the 90s, there are some animated sequences as well. Some that are also voiced by Ali Hillis. So it's just like it's interesting because I was pleasantly surprised, because the fear with these types of games in this current era of gaming is that a puzzle game like this would be geared more towards like a younger audience. And I don't think that's the case with a game like this. I think that it is accessible to a younger audience, but I think it is appropriate to an older gaming audience. So I think it hits. Like if you remember those old school puzzle adventure games from like the 90s, like this hits the same notes while still incorporating like things that are relevant to like, like a tablet generation of gaming. So it's a 5-part episodic game. The first part is free. If it's just in the Windows Marketplace, so any machine that's running Windows 8, you can access the game and download it era. And get all the achievements and everything, and it's actually really fun, and I definitely think that it's a good part of the puzzle adventure genre, and it's like a nice little adventure story in there too. And anyone that's listened to our interview with Ali Hillis from last week will remember that she mentioned that as they were recording, she's continuously recording the audio for the game. So as they recorded the first episode, they were still exploring like sort of who the character was and what it was all about, and she mentioned that in the later episodes they kind of like become a little more loose with the characters, where they start being like a little more sarcastic and like saying like, oh my god, another puzzle, like what am I gonna do now, like that kind of thing. So I'm looking forward to that. So I will be picking up the other episodes, but I would encourage everyone else to check out Adara for free on Windows 8 first episode. So, Hillary Nash, you want to spoil BioShock Infinite for everybody, do you not?
Yeah, do you want to listen or not?
No, I don't care. I don't mind if you spoil it. It's up to Matt.
Yeah, I don't care either.
No, it's fine. Go for it.
Okay, so...
Okay.
So, listeners, we should probably drop in our trademark
Reaper sound spoilers. Wow. Wow.
Alert, alert. Battle stations.
Space alert.
Space alert.
Oh, what is the aliens one? You now have 14 minutes to reach minimum safe distance.
Yes. God, I love that movie.
That's such a great movie.
All right, so it's been a while since I beat Bioshock Infinite, but I do I do remember I beat it pretty much all in one sitting, which, let me tell you, my wife loves when I sit there for 12 and a half hours. And, and she's like, wow. Do you want to eat? And I'm like, you get away from me. Don't even look at me. Yeah, so that was pretty much happened when I played Infinite. But I loved the story. That was definitely my favorite part of Infinite. And I'm going to be perfectly honest. Like, I liked Bioshock a lot, the first Bioshock a lot, but I didn't love it. And I didn't necessarily understand why everyone, you know, thought it was the best thing ever. I loved it, but I wasn't going to, like, you know, freak out over it. So this, I understand, like, I understand the whole, like, the worship of Ken Levine and everything after this game, because the way this narrative is constructed, it is, I honestly felt like I was playing an incredible adventure film from start to finish that was just saturated with science fiction and adventure and all the things that I love so much. And it's all part of this incredible story that has time travel and everything kind of all inside of this one insane tale. So I really, really love the story. What about you, Hillary?
Yeah, I really, really love the story. I did feel a bit creepy at one point. I mean, not that Bioshock has ever not made me feel creepy. I've been a huge fan forever, but because of something that happens at the end, I was like, ooh, I'm feeling a bit pervy now for having thought something else.
Oh, wait, anyway, I mean, this is spoiler, so I mean,
okay, well, I don't want to ruin that one. That's like a huge, like, oh my God moment.
Well, okay. Well,
are we allowed to say that?
Yeah, this is we're spoiling it.
Okay, fine. Okay. So when you find out that you're Elizabeth's dad, mm-hmm. I felt a bit creepy because
what? Why would you spoil that for me?
We gave you the option.
Not only are you Elizabeth's dad, but you're also
Comstock.
Her brother.
You're the main villain of the story too. So here's the fucking crazy thing. So the whole
story—you're the freaking villain. Oh, and when they choke you. Yes. Oh, I was like, what is going on?
We got to start at the beginning. So the 2-minute rundown is you're hired to rescue this girl from a city in the sky. And the year is 1913. And this city has decided to not be part
of... City in the clouds, actually.
Yeah, it decided to break free from the Union. And they hired this super scientist to create these anti-gravity systems. And they basically lift the city off into the sky. And they are their own government, their own way of life and everything. You get hired to go rescue this girl from the city in the sky, and the rest is just this fucking crazy adventure of discovering, you know, how these super scientists actually constructed the city and who's the crazy guy running it and, you know, why is there this civil war going on inside the city and how do people have special powers? And it's incredible. Like, this, mm-hmm. the quality of storytelling is absolutely incredible. It becomes... Okay, you might have to do another spoiler sound here, Scott, because we're about to spoil Fringe, the show Fringe.
Oh, no.
So I'm spoiling Fringe.
That's so brutal.
Right now.
Why would you do that?
Hang in there.
Wow.
It's the same fucking story. So here's what happens. You had your daughter taken from you when she was a baby. Your daughter becomes the Elizabeth from the story. You go to rescue the daughter. Because the father in the alternate reality could not have children, so he wanted to kidnap a daughter from another reality to raise as his own because he's infertile. So it is literally the story of Fringe with the two Walter Bishops, one stealing Peter and all that kind of stuff. The Walternate. So, so the main villain is actually you, but he's been all, like, messed up from scientific testing. And
No, the thing that's really screwed up, though, is that you're in the end game and... You're basically running through all these doors, which are like portals, and you come to the conclusion, well, I need to go back in time and kill him when he's a baby. Like, I need to, like, kill this guy before he becomes a problem. And then you end up at this critical point of the game where you had made a choice in another realm, And then all of a sudden, all of these different Elizabeths come up to you and like kill you. Mm-hmm. And you're like, what? But it was like, it was confusing and cool and awesome all at the same time.
Yeah.
My only criticism of the game, actually, because I really enjoyed, I think I played it in 3 sittings. I really honestly enjoyed every minute of it. After coming off of Tomb Raider and having experienced the amazing mechanics combat wise in Tomb Raider, I didn't like the guns as much.
Yes, that was my qualm last week. You were going to say, what mm-hmm. were your qualms with BioShock? The gameplay was okay. It wasn't great. The guns didn't feel great. Mm-hmm. I have a real problem with what the hell are they called? My God, the special abilities you get, the crows and stuff.
Vigors.
I had a problem with the vigors. Like,
why? I love the vigors.
They're great. They look great. But
did you do the combos like fly like the flaming crows and stuff?
The problem with the vigors was that I don't know. I've never been a fan of how BioShock. It's kind of old school as mentality, like the no regenerating health, the vigors don't regenerate on their own. You have to find like little bottles and shit around the environment. So you're constantly looting like every 5 seconds. Like that to me detracts from the gameplay. Like I shouldn't have to eat candy bars out of fucking barrels every 3.5 minutes. Like there's
or
a
eat
way
cake
to
off of dead people.
Yeah. Or cake or bananas or pineapples or whatever the fuck.
Hot dogs.
Yes. Like it slows the gameplay down and I'm constantly just like, I'm not even looking at what I'm eating. I'm just like running around shoveling things into my character to get my bars back up. Like
well,
if the bars were generated even slowly on their own, it would kind of remove the need for all that excessive collecting.
They do have gear that you can find. You can find like gears like to like clothes and shoes and stuff to augment your own vigors and powers and stuff. So there is like I had like vampiric boots or something. So anytime I killed an enemy, I received health. So in a sense that I was constantly regaining health. The Eve or the whatever the salts, it's salts in this one, I think. Yeah. Mm. So the salt for your powers. Yeah. That one you had to kind of collect all over the place. I didn't find any gear that helped me replenish that. But yeah, as soon as I found that piece of like gear, I think it was boots or something, that really did help. But I mean, I agree. I mean, you're constantly running around your environment, dodging bullets, trying to pick up some more salt so you can have murder of crows happen. You know what I mean? Like it's so.
I understand. Like the powers are incredibly like insanely powerful. Like you can take out massive groups of enemies. But I think there is, it's essentially a mana system for a spell, right? Let's call it whatever the fuck you want. That's what it is. But there's a way to make that happen more organically without having to go around and constantly replenish it through picking up items. I just think that's a really old school kind of way of doing things.
Well, what did you think about the ship defense battle? That was like the only like, oh.
Well, that was
like,
hard.
I hated that. Yeah. I really did hate that.
That was really hard. I liked controlling the Songbird, which is also kind of a spoiler, but Songbird sort of like this game's version of the Big Daddy. I enjoyed that fight because it was so challenging, and I loved because at that point in the game, you're incredibly powerful. Like the amount of stuff you can do is pretty insane because you're at your maximum level. It's the last fight of the game, right? So it's nice. It was nice being able to lay waste to like so much at the same time, even though it was really hard.
Yeah, I don't know. I actually felt it was challenging, but it wasn't as hard as if I had to go through, you know, a legion of troops or something. You know what I mean? I would have preferred all on the ground combat as opposed to trying to do like a tower defense or ship defense. Yeah. That's just not my cup of tea. But.
The last thing we should probably talk about is the characters, Booker DeWitt and essentially Elizabeth.
I was so brokenhearted. I loved Booker.
Yeah, Booker was great. And Troy Baker did an awesome job as Booker. He was absolutely incredible. Courtney Draper did Elizabeth. And you know what's crazy? She actually quit voice acting and quit acting.
Really?
And she's in law school now.
Oh, wow.
I don't know why I learned that, but I did. But yeah, so she, both of them did an incredible job. You know, with their characters and the AI for everyone's been talking about this. So I apologize if you listen to other podcasts or read the internet at all about BioShock. Everyone's been like glowing about the Elizabeth AI, and it is some of the best AI you'll ever see in your life. It's incredible. Like she never gets in the way. She's helpful. She tosses you ammo. She's not annoying. She is just a great character. So they did a brilliant job with her.
I agree, especially when she gives you money.
Yes. Like the whole catching money thing never got old.
No, and or salt or health or whatever. Yeah. No, I'm just really excited. Yeah.
So BioShock, BioShock 2, BioShock Infinite. How do you make a sequel to this game? What comes after Infinite?
Well, they ended you. So what they did that I thought was really creative is that they dropped you as you're figuring out what's happening in the end game after you've, you know, done the ship defense thing. You go back, or you go into the future to the time when BioShock happens. So you go underwater into that world that I personally really dig. So the fact that they tied that in, I was super happy about. What they could probably do now is what happens between Booker / Comstock dying to the time when you become Big Daddy.
Well, I mean, I don't know if they really think that 2 is part of the canon, to be honest. What I think, how BioShock Infinite ended was saying that there are literally infinite realities, which is where the title comes from. And in every single reality, there is an oppressive ruler. There is a man trying to save a girl. There is, a super city that's, you know, forged of science. And in every single one of those realities, it's going to kind of repeat infinitely. So in essence, there are unlimited games, all of which are remotely similar to one another. All of them can also be tied together because they are part of the same universe, but they're all different realities. It gets super, super David Lynch, super crazy, like time travel-y, science-y. But it's great. It's so well done.
Last question. Is this a 90% plus game, or is that just groupthink and people saying like, hey, this game is supposed to be 90 plus. I'm going to give it a 90 plus.
No, to be honest, man, I wanted to hate it. I really did. I'm not, I wanted to not like this game. Mm-hmm. There were moments that I literally stood up off the couch and like yelled over to my wife, like, did you see that? Like, for instance, there's like there's rips in reality open up and you think you're in 1914 and all of a sudden you'll just hear Cyndi Lauper. Or the police or like Cyndi Lauper music coming through this hole in time. And then like you'll start listening to all the period specific music and realize that the barbershop quartets are singing music from the 80s and 90s.
Dude, that killed me.
It totally killed me. Freak the fuck out because you realize it's like these people are using time travel and using technology from the future to build the city of the past and like, you know, basically cannibalizing all that information and all of that tech to build this new society, which just was like the coolest thing ever for me.
All right.
Yeah, I think like the first time you see the barbershop quartet, they're singing like the Beach Boys.
Yeah, they are.
And I was like, wait, what?
I did the same thing.
Yeah, interesting.
It was amazing.
Oh, and Jennifer Hale kills in it too. She's a secondary character, supporting character, but she's great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
It was long-winded. I'm sorry. I'm very excited.
That's okay. People wanted to know. Yeah. Somebody wanted to know what we thought about this game, so there you go.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo.
So Hillary, you saw... We Tom Cruise.
He's 5'7", according to Google.
we little Tom Cruise in a movie called Oblivion, which I was apprehensive about because I'm sort of
getting
a little... I'm getting Morgan Freeman saturation in my life at this point. Mm-hmm. Where like I see him and I'm like, oh, he's that character again. And it makes me not want to see the movie. So tell me about Oblivion. Very briefly, no spoilers.
So just really quick, it's an amazing sci-fi movie that I think anyone who can appreciate a different spin on some things. Boy, if I say that, it's totally spoilery. Okay, let me back up. So it basically is set in the world where there's been an alien invasion, and now there's people who take care of the planet for its resources because the humans have moved off the planet and are living in a spaceship. Orbiting the Earth and then also living on Titan, which is one of, I believe, I'm going to totally mess this up. I believe it's one of Saturn's moons. Yes? Titan?
I think it is. Yeah.
So humans are now living on another planet because the Earth is just inhabitable. So they send people to Earth to, collect the water out of the ocean and do things like that. So you kind of go into this movie and there's a man and a woman. One being Tom Cruise, obviously, flying around and making sure the drones are watching the big, they look like oil rigs, but on steroids, kind of all over the planet, just gathering resources. And their job is to make sure that these machines are working and that they're functioning as an effective team and that everything is going well. And then in 2 weeks or whatever, they're going to go back to Titan. So they're looking forward to getting off the planet. Well, Tom Cruise has like this kind of relationship with the Earth where he wants to find out more about its history and kind of he keeps like a tin that has like a plant and he's taking care of it. So he's kind of enjoying being on the planet and is kind of questioning whether or not he wants to leave. So a bunch of things happen and there's, a bunch of rebels, humans that are still living on the planet, fighting back against the stealing of the resources. This war happens and there's a bunch of twists and turns in the plot.
Cool. So you recommend it?
I was super entertained. Yeah.
Oh, great. Great.
This is actually, it's directed by a guy named Joseph Kosinski. It's only his second movie. He did Tron Legacy.
I like Legacy.
And then he did this, and it's got a weird history. He actually wrote and produced a graphic novel called Oblivion so that he could sell this story to Hollywood to make a movie.
Interesting. It's a roundabout way of doing it.
Good on
yeah,
him.
Like yeah. He didn't think he would get to make it because he's, first time director, and he knew it'd be kind of a big budget sci-fi movie. So he got Tron and then made this. I don't know if the timing was he made this first or after Tron, but got Tron and kind of proved himself and then, sold this graphic novel to Hollywood to say like, hey, look, I already made the story, already produced what it's going to be. I just want to do it as a movie. So awesome. I've been excited to see this. I haven't had time with moving and everything to go see it yet, but I'm glad you liked it because I've heard it's gorgeous and I love the soundtrack
really
done by M83, which is, I know we're both fans of.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's definitely one of those movies that you want to spend the extra money and actually go see it in the theater. I would highly recommend it. It's a huge movie and you're going to really like it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Great.
All right. Guys. So,
Aquatic.
Y'all.
All right, guys, we are back with our Nerquato of the week, the nerd-appropriate question of the week. of the week.
All right.
Nerd-appropriate episode 102. And this one happened for sort of an interesting reason. When one of our listeners contacted us saying they're having problems downloading one of the podcasts and got to chatting over Twitter, and it turns out that they were tweeting us from Africa. And I was like, incredibly surprised and a little bit humbled, and I started wondering where some of you guys were from. So the question was, where are you currently living, and what's your favorite thing about where you live, about your hometown? And we got some amazing responses this week, and I had no idea you guys were from so many different places.
That's amazing. That really means a lot too.
It does.
Really appreciate
it. As we read through these, I was annoying the crap out of my wife all weekend as we're getting these in, and I was like, we have someone from Switzerland. We have another person. And she's just like, yeah, whatever. I don't care. Yeah.
I thought your question was kind of creepy. I'm not going to lie.
It was for the most non-creepy reason.
Oh, I know. But at first I was like, why would you ask that?
Yeah. I actually thought he was just looking for a new place to live.
Where do you live?
Crowdsource some answers about what would be good.
Right?
Yeah. Well, I was actually just super curious because we can look at analytics, but they're just weird. So it's easier to actually hear from people. And we have a lot of answers here. So.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll start off with Aurora Mitchell, who is at Aurora Mitchell. And she says, bonjour from Quebec. So we have one from Quebec.
Yay.
That's Melissa and I's list this year is Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dying to go.
Jacques Major, Cat Jack 1997, says Ottawa, Ontario. For the capital of Canada, we certainly don't get very many cons. That doesn't seem like a highlight.
Yeah.
Shun D at
Selena Lim
923 says Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. I love the different cultures and races that coexist together and the awesome food. And the food is awesome. Our a little personal detail, Ash and I's wives family is from Malaysia, right outside of Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah.
Wow.
You hear about it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So the flying beer at the flying beer, I'm going to pronounce the first one wrong. I know it. Neon or Nyon?
Either one.
Anyway, we'll it's in it. Switzerland near Geneva and the CERN Large Hadron Collider. Oh my God. I just totally, I totally
why would I say my name?
Why would I say my name? Okay. Hope I won't be swallowed by a black hole. Yes.
This one literally made me like jump up and go, oh my God. How fucking cool is that? That this guy lives right next to the freaking Large Hadron Collider. How terrifying.
Guy or lady.
Sorry. Yes, it's true.
Hold on. I'm going to find out really quick how to pronounce that because that's going to really bother me. Nyon?
Hadron or Nyon?
No, Nyon.
Okay.
So, you know, friend of the show, Melissa Kay at the Quad Skater says, first time I read this, I was like, what? It didn't even make sense to me when I read it. And now I understand it. Although I will admit, is it Alberta? Is AB Alberta? I just moved to population 7,000, Innisfail, Alberta, and it's only 1 hour from Calgary and just under two hours to Edmonton. Expos all around. And we actually talked about this at PAX East when she was moving. She was super excited. She was like, I guess her town is pretty small, but she's like in a good size distance from everything. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Still
also,
Canada. Still
I also
icy roads
to add,
everywhere. Just kidding.
I wanted to add from the press to reset transmission perspective. On episode 101, we dished out some pretty harsh challenges, I think. But I also wanted to add that they also said some really nice things about us in our reaching episode 100 on their most recent podcast. So thank you to the reset transmission folks for the love. We appreciate it. And we would encourage our listeners to also go check out reset transmission at presstoreset.com.
Of course. Of course.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. It's awesome.
Yeah. So Eric Halston, he says, Robbinsdale, a suburb near Minneapolis, the origin of Wiz Publishing, of Captain Billy Whizbang. Later, they'd make Shazam. The nerdiest thing was me submitting an Ingress portal at the site of the mural commemorating Captain Billy Whizbang. That's awesome.
Do you know Minneapolis is rated one of the best cities to live in the country?
Really?
Really?
Time and time again. Yeah.
You know it was number 98 on that list?
What?
Fort Myers, Florida.
There you go.
Heyo.
Born and raised. Just kidding.
Well, do you want to say your answer then, Ash? Do you have something?
Well, I mean, obviously, most of you guys know I live in Orlando, Florida. And my favorite thing about Orlando, Florida, that is a hard one. I would probably to say that my favorite thing about Orlando, Florida,
Harry Potter Land.
No, is having Matt and Scott really close by.
Oh, that's the nerdiest thing about Orlando, everybody.
Me and Scott.
You heard it here first.
Nerdiest thing about Orlando. Yeah.
I'm feeling a little left out, guys.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I live 3,000 miles away.
Yeah. That's true. Ann Berens at Ann Berens on Twitter says, Chicago, Illinois, USA. I love how busy the city is. I grew up in the suburbs and was so bored.
I have been looking at cities lately for different reasons, and Chicago comes up over and over and over again. And every time I ask somebody like, hey, you know, Chicago or New York or Chicago and DC, Chicago wins the fight every time from anybody who's been to both places. It's the weirdest thing to me.
Interesting. Mm.
I haven't been since I was 17, and honestly, I hated it when I was 17, but that's not an accurate depiction of any city when you go when you're 17. So
that is true.
Yeah.
Robert Frimering at Mr. Slick says, cold land of Alaska. My favorite thing is huge family gatherings. Great family keeps me from moving. 9 sisters, 6 brothers. Wow.
Yeah.
Here's the view up in the A1 in Alaska. Mountains surround the city. A1. Yeah, no interstates in Alaska. My favorite pastime is family gatherings.
And then he repeats himself. He actually sent us a picture, which I want to put in the show notes, because he actually stepped outside and took a picture of what it looked like where he lives, which was awesome. And it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Kind of jealous.
That's awesome. Yeah. And we had always wondered why we'd never seen Mr. Freemering at any conventions, and now we know why, because he's in Alaska.
Yeah, he's in Alaska.
But we appreciate him talking to us all the time. It's awesome.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So
I like Hitler C's answer.
Yeah, Hitler C wants to remain a man of mystery and just says nope, 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 nope. And I'm not going to read them all, but it's over and over again.
Yeah. Dot AVI.
.AVI. We're not trying to stalk you. We really just want to know what you like about where you live.
Yeah.
It's a creepy question.
It was not a creepy question.
The intention of the question was not.
I guess it's different if you're a woman.
So Hillary, do you want to give up your answer or no?
So I'm gonna be I'm just gonna be very vague.
You don't have to say the name of the town you live in or anything.
No. So I'm gonna say I live in the San Francisco Bay Area.
There you
and
go.
The thing that I love about it is that I feel like I'm part of something big. Like that sounds very weird to say, but I feel like because Silicon Valley's here, there's always interesting people to talk to, and you find that you find yourself getting in conversations about new technology and kind of the capabilities for us in the future. I really love that about being here. So, awesome.
Yeah, but you don't live next to the Large Hadron Collider or anything.
No, but I live close to the big Google.
That's true.
Cool.
Yeah.
Scott, you have to read the next one. The one after that. You have to read Corey Ann Campbell's, not this one.
Okay, well, there's two more.
You're skipping. There's two more then.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I got excited.
Right, so I'll talk. So Karen Beats at Bellacanto 114 says, Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. My workplace, BioWare, is likely the nerdiest place, but my favorite is the awesome science center.
Ah,
awesome. Cool.
Did you notice that she spelled center R-E?
R-E, yes. Yeah.
Do you know that she's an American in Canada?
I do know that.
Expat.
Yep. So she's taking on the Canadian spelling.
I was going to say, that sounds very English as well.
Mm-hmm. I like that Hillary gets to read both the Switzerland and the Sweden one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm taking this one too?
Yeah, sure. It's your turn.
Yeah, this one.
I just went. I just said Karen.
You should know how to read this.
Oh, yeah.
Word,
oh, this is Ashlyn. Sorry, Ashlyn.
Oh, okay. It's Ostersund.
Ostersund. Okay.
And
so
I think
Nora,
that means like east, I think.
Nora at Interpreter 13 says Ostersund, Sweden. Beautiful at night, lots of snow, and our local game store has an awesome owner and employees. Isn't game like GameStop here in America?
It is.
Game
actually.
Is like the European
store. Yeah, it is.
Cool. Thank you for contacting us all the way from Sweden, by the way, Nora. That's awesome.
I love Sweden.
Corey Ann Campbell at Jelly Drake says, Tulsa, Oklahoma, nerdy fun, Weird Al's UHF was filmed here. And
Scott, have you ever watched UHF?
I don't know. I think I've heard of that movie once or twice. UHF.
Hey, and kids.
Corey Ann is right, and I know I've said this before on the podcast, but if by chance you happen to own or ever get a chance to own the DVD or Blu-ray for UHF, you should listen to it with the commentary turned on, because Weird Al can remember the names of all of the places and all of the extras and people that they filmed with during the movie, and he talks about them throughout the whole film, and it's like totally bizarre.
It's awesome.
Awesome. Yeah. So, Scott, why don't you do yours?
Well, should I talk about Orlando or should I talk about where we're from?
I guess it's whichever one you want. Yeah.
Okay. So I guess I'll say Orlando then. So obviously we're Central Florida, Orlando. And I think the thing that I like about it is that a lot of people are kind of down on Orlando, but I kind of like it because there's kind of like a one of everything feel here. There's kind of like something, I feel like there's something for everybody, and there's a little something of everything here. You know what I mean? So I kind of like that aspect of it. I like that there's like a tourist area and then like in sort of like an indie area and a college area. And there's sort of like this whole, it's like a big, it's becoming like a melting pot. And I think that sort of variety is enough to keep me interested. And I kind of like that. So cool. That's my answer.
Sweet. Bethany Westmoreland at Hemi Art says, Seattle, and I love so many things about it. PAX, amazing coffee, food trucks, putting birds on things, all awesome.
Really, they also put birds on things.
Yeah, I was
going
to say, do they get Portland's?
Yeah.
They think they do. Yeah.
Put a bird on it.
Justin Banks at Midtown 583 says, Pembroke Pines, Florida. Nothing really nerdy here, but we do have the best comic shop, Taste Comics, to the north of us. And to be completely clear, I saw him tweet at us, and he was tweeting at us on his wedding day. Yeah.
Congratulations,
Midtown 583, Justin Banks. And yeah, I was like, hey, isn't it your wedding day? And he goes, yeah, but I always have time for the Naquato. I'm like, what?
I love that.
Thanks,
guys. Awesome.
I think I need
Thank you.
Butt massage or something.
Happy wedding.
Yeah.
So Nate Hales at nhales80 says, Omaha, Nebraska. It's centrally located and people are nice. It's 1 million people, but you wouldn't know it. Also, steaks. Go Big Red.
You can so. Order steaks from Omaha, Nebraska. A friend, you know?
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
Omaha Steaks, I believe. A friend of ours, of Scott and ours, Scott and Mai's, friend of Scott and mine. Mm.
Yeah,
we'll
sure.
go with that.
Yeah.
Is Travis, T2, is absolutely obsessed with Omaha, Nebraska right now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He visited, and every time he talked about like where they want to live eventually, he was like, it's so cheap, and everyone's so nice, and it's still like a big city, but it's like cheap. It's super cheap, and everybody's really nice. And I'm like, oh my God, he would not stop talking about
cool.
it.
Cool.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I have family that's from Nebraska, so go Big Red.
Awesome. Yeah. Eric at Echep33 says, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, our casino. Permanente Bros restaurant, must have if you ever pass through. Nothing nerdy here, unfortunately. I'm sure there's something nerdy in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
Steel Town.
Yeah,
it's just tough. It's just a tough as nails town.
That's cool. Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Andrew Baker at A Baker and Seven says, "I live in Niagara Falls, Ontario, Canada." Right.
Yeah.
I like that my town is trying to get more nerdy. Our third Comic-Con happens this June. It's a good thing because finding like-minded geeks in this city is near impossible.
Aww.
Awesome. Aww. He writes to us often, so
he
thanks
does.
Again, Andrew. He's an awesome guy. Stumpy Nat. Natalie, our good friend, says, I live outside of San Francisco. I like the sea lions down on Fisherman's Wharf.
Aww.
That's fun to go down there and look at them lay it around is. All bloaty. Mm.
How Matt, how about you? What is your answer to this question?
I don't know. Can I give two about the place I just moved from and the place I'm in now?
Sure. Sure. Why not?
I'm in Orlando now, and, you know, family and friends is definitely top of the list, about why I like being here, just cause I like being near everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have to agree with Scott, and I was thinking that, a big reason that it's becoming such a more of a kind of like actual city is that the university here is gigantic now. UCF used to be a really tiny kind of commuter school, and it's gotten a lot bigger in the past probably about 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're starting to see college kids actually stick around after college and kind of set roots here. And that's usually how cities, bigger cities that have colleges in them, tend to grow a little bit and get more unique and fun things because people actually want to stay and live there and not just go here for 4 years and then take off, or come and work at Disney for a year and then leave, or, you know, like we were pretty transient for a long time. So I think that's happening, and it's a good thing. There's a lot of kind of community starting to happen in the city, and that's good. And then
there's a lot of people that want community here.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Yeah.
And then I just moved from Brooklyn, and Brooklyn, I think the best thing I would say about New York, and it's like an intangible, is that, New York really felt like anything was kind of possible. It was weird. It was like you live there and there's just like a weird energy there that makes it feel like anything is freaking possible at any time. So mm-hmm.
I know what you're saying.
I loved that about it.
Awesome. But yeah.
Good answers. All right. Ness Clark shortly at VCS shortly, says that she is from Burlington, Ontario, live in Hillsboro, North Carolina. We have awesome beer here, courtesy of Mystery Brewing. Man, Hillsboro is really close to where I vacation in the summer, so that's kind of crazy.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So Anorax Oasis says, Colorado Springs, Colorado. I have to say the view. I get to wake up every day and look at the mountains. Nice.
Oh, wow. These are the 8-Bit. That's the 8-Bit gang. This is their their podcast. So congratulations to them. I think they're like 10 episodes in or something like that.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
So that's great.
Jen Jarvis at Hokie98JJ says, I live in Manassas, Virginia, DC suburbs. Pretty cool area for history nerds. I know you can appreciate that.
Indeed.
Yes. That's cool.
Hi, Jen.
I'm pretty there, too.
I think we're all about the DC area. I think that's
DC.
Fan favorite. Oh,
I would totally live there.
Yeah.
Yeah. DC is one of my fave areas in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Me, too.
So, sort of last, but not really. Carlo at Platinum Fist says, Tucson, Arizona, awesome sunsets pretty much daily, and the Sonoran hot dog. Just got to deal with that heat, and we understand that in Florida.
Yeah, we certainly do. It's a different kind of heat, right? I'm sure the heat there is drier and ours
it's
is
a dry heat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Theirs is, but theirs gets, I mean, it climbs pretty damn high for being a dry heat. So I think you still feel it at the end of the day.
Yeah. We just have swamp ball heat here. Yeah. Most of the time.
That's what you just said. Yes.
And I guess we're going to, we're going to wrap things up. We got an email from Switzerland.
It relates. Yeah.
And we're going to, do you want to read the email?
Well, I'll just summarize it a little bit.
Okay. Summarize it.
So we got an email from Marie, who is a French Java developer who lives in the French part of Switzerland, says loves drinking, loves playing video games and drinking beer, and says, thanks to you, I get to improve my English skills through listening to Nerd Appropriate, which is awesome.
Which is great and a little scary at the same time.
And as soon as I read that, I was like,
we're
man,
sorry
I hope,
for that?
Hope Ash has not tarnished this person.
Yeah, she's going to get arrested.
No. Yeah, but we will try to I guess help you in that aspect with the
she's gonna go to work and be like, tell me of the cum command. I want to know all about cum command.
Please don't say that. Gets to learn about geek culture at her leisure without moving from the couch. And then laughs at our podcast, which we really appreciate. So thank you for writing in, Marie. That's really awesome. She asks if we do plan to go to Europe this year to any conventions. Unfortunately, I don't think we do at this time. But
let me check the budget real quick.
Yeah.
I might be in Sweden, but not for nerdy stuff.
We would love to. The short answer is we would love to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not at this juncture.
Thank you, Marie, for writing in. That's super awesome. Soon. I was planning a vacation last year, and I did actually look at the French part of Switzerland. I thought it was really nice, and I just didn't make it over there, but I really hope to go someday. So that's awesome. That's really cool. I hope you enjoy it over there in Switzerland.
Yeah. Thanks so much for listening.
Yeah. And thanks for writing.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Cool.
Well, big thanks to everyone for writing on that one. That one was a little personal, so we appreciate you not
thinking. I kind of like that question. I feel like we got to learn a lot about each other.
Yeah, I think so too. It was cool finding out where people were from, because to be honest, a lot of these people have been writing us answering our questions of the week for, you know, well over a year at least, and I had no idea where the hell they were from, so it's nice to know where they're from now.
I feel like a family now. We're like a closer family. This is great.
Except Kittler.
Yeah.
Nope.
Love that mysterious Kittler scene.
He should have just linked the
Shia LaBeouf.
Shia LaBeouf video.
Shia LaBeouf.
Actual cannibal Shia LaBeouf.
Hiding in the shadows.
All right. We already played that music.
Yeah, we did.
All right.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in to episode 102 of the Rated NA podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at nerdappropriate and become part of our slowly growing community. But we appreciate you guys very, very much. You can follow us check us out on Facebook/nerdappropriate or shoot us an email like Marie did. And it's Ash, Scott, Hillary, 1L, or Matt at nerdappropriate.com. And, you know, we're all over the place. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. And we will be back next week with a fresh new episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
102.
Wow. You know what I mean? Like, you know that this particular foe is like...
Do you have a pen in your hand?
Yeah.
You are all business all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Such a sophisticated businesswoman. I'm going to hold a pen in my hand. Make it look like I'm busy. I'm going to put a pencil behind my ear.
I'm just going to hold deodorant right next to the mic. Is that weird, guys?
Nice.
Oh, my God.
By the way, number one business tip, always have deodorant in your desk.